Chalk up three straight quarters now of economic growth.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, welcome to The Morning Open. I'm Bob Moon in for Bill Radke. Investors have a fresh number to ponder as trading begins this morning. The government has added everything up from the first 3 months of this year, and its primary indicator of economic growth is up a little, more than 3%. That's a solid gain, although not quite as much as some experts were expecting. We'll talk to a leading economist about that in a moment. But first, where's Wall Street? The Dow Industrials are up a modest 0.1%, just 15 points at 11,183. But the S&P 500 and NASDAQ are struggling for inspiration. They're both just below the red line at this hour. So out of the gate, the numbers suggest Wall Street is less than impressed. What about Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial? He joins us live now. Chris, does this gain in the gross domestic product give us any fresh clues on how much this recovery might be taking hold?
Yeah, absolutely. As you said, it's three quarters in a row, and that in itself is a good thing. Within the report, too, most of the details are positive. We have growth in areas where we like to see it. Personal consumption is up more than it was last quarter. Businesses are spending on equipment again. That's always a great sign. And we don't have a whole lot of help from government, too, which is actually considered a positive thing going forward.
Well, personal consumption, you mentioned, consumer spending. We heard that we were spending too much, and now we need to be spending again?
Well, yeah, it's a little bit of that going on. 3.6% growth in consumption is the strongest in years. You have to go back before the recession. But this is still positive in the sense that we still are paying down debt and have been for seven quarters. So it's the kind of acceleration that can be sustained going forward because it is coming from income, not from debt.
Any surprises in these numbers?
Well, the biggest surprise was a drop in residential investment. Housing starts were up in the quarter, but spending on new housing was down, which sounds a little bit odd. The explanation is that home builders are building starter homes to take advantage of the first-time home buyer tax credit, so the dollar average price on those homes is lower. That explains the decline.
Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial, thanks for your insights.
You're welcome.
Looks like any expansion of offshore oil drilling is now on hold. That's what the Obama administration is signaling this morning, at least according to one White House aide, until we know how big that oil spill is and how it could have happened. The black gunk is now floating into the fragile marshland along the Louisiana coast as the crude flows unchecked at an estimated rate of 5,000 barrels a day. The fishing and tourism business can only watch as this ecological disaster unfolds. And as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports from London, the British owner of The Well is bracing for a gusher of lawsuits.
Investors are worried about the potential cost of legal claims. The fear is that with its environment in jeopardy and many livelihoods at stake, the state of Louisiana will sue BP. Commercial and charter fishermen have already filed at least six class action lawsuits. Many more are thought to be in the pipeline. BP will be especially nervous, says Chris Grabowski of Peak Oil Consulting, because of the American legal system.
It opens up a sort of Pandora's box of legal action. You have this concept of punitive damages. You have this well-established tradition of class actions, and you can get very large settlements under those.
Punitive damages of $5 billion were initially awarded against Exxon after the Exxon Valdez disaster in 1989. Those damages were later much reduced on appeal. Nevertheless, Exxon's total bill was more than $3 billion. The worry is that BP could be facing an even bigger tab. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Friday, April 30th at marketplace.org. Continental Airlines and United Airlines reportedly have plans to merge. The deal would create the biggest carrier in the world. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins has more.
The merger could be announced as soon as Monday, but it's been the talk for years. This United Airlines ad would barely have to be rewritten.
Where you go in life is up to you. There's one airline that can take you there.
If the merger goes through, the new company will keep the United brand and ditch the Continental name. Julius Maldutis with Aviation Dynamics says the deal will help carriers stay stable in a turbulent market.
You have too many airlines to begin with, so you have great competition all over the place.
Legacy carriers have been hammered by low-cost upstarts. United lost $82 million in the first quarter. Richard Gritta teaches airline finance at the University of Portland. He says the merger may not be the best news for flyers who already pay extra fees for everything from snacks to checked bags.
You're going to have a huge airline, and they are going to be able then to raise prices.
Gritta says even though the deal will create the world's biggest airline, it probably won't be considered a monopoly by government regulators. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
In January, the Supreme Court ruled that corporations could spend freely on election ads. Yesterday, lawmakers in Congress introduced legislation to counter that decision. It would force companies, unions, and interest groups to publicly put their name on ad spending. From Washington, Marketplace's Brett Neely has more.
If the bill passes, trade groups like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce would have to name their top donors in political advertising. That's one reason why New York Senator Charles Schumer introduced the bill.
I think that lots of these ads, the people who put them forward are happy to do it if they can do it in the dark of night. But once sunlight occurs, they shrivel up and don't do them. So I think there'll be many fewer of them.
The bill would also bar government contractors and bailout recipients and U.S. subsidiaries of foreign firms from campaign-related expenditures. Lawyer Ted Olson, who successfully argued the Citizens United case, represents the Chamber of Commerce and says the bill goes too far.
What Congress is trying to do here is to restrict the dissemination of ideas about candidates for public office.
Even if the bill passes, and that will be tough in an election year, its constitutionality is expected to be challenged in court. In Washington, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
More than 3 months after the devastating earthquake in Haiti, Congress has introduced the Haiti Economic Lift Program, or HELP Act. It would allow more Haitian textiles to be sold in the U.S. without import duties. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports.
Textiles and apparel make up more than 80% of Haiti's exports, and the U.S. buys most of it. So if Congress does away with import duties for clothes made in Haiti, it provides an incentive for international companies to open factories there. Fabrizio Operti is with the Inter-American Development Bank.
This is very positive for investment in Haiti in the textile and apparel sector, and it's very important for job creation.
Some worry that most of the jobs will still be in a single dominant industry, but Stephanie Burgos with Oxfam America says those jobs are key to Haiti's recovery. Oxfam supports the bill in Congress. At the same time, Burgos agrees on the need to diversify the economy.
We should be helping Haitians to rebuild their agricultural sector and to build their domestic capacity to produce food. But I don't think one is exclusive of the other.
She says the legislation would expand a program that monitors labor conditions so that the apparel industry could grow while reducing the number of sweatshops. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Can you spot the common thread in these three things? Television, the X-ray machine, and the ice cream cone. Well, they were all unveiled at big international expositions, otherwise known as World's Fairs. And China hopes to bring back the days when those events used to be a very big deal. Shanghai has spent an estimated $58 billion getting ready for its 2010 World Expo, which is way more than Beijing spent prepping for the Olympics. In a few hours, our China Bureau Chief Scott Tong will be there as it begins. Hey, Scott.
Hello, Bob.
Let me fiddle uncomfortably with my tie here and note that I've heard this expo called the Rodney Dangerfield of world news. Nobody gives it any respect at all. Is there something different this time around?
Well, here I've heard it also called the six-month-long trade show. So there are people in Shanghai dissing it, too. But talk to the companies and the countries that are participating, and this is the trade show that cannot be missed because this is China, the great emerging market of our time, the chance to show your face to the Chinese government, to show your face to 100 million Chinese customers. You know, as one person put it to me, in Imperial China, the outsiders came to pay tribute to the emperor. And now they come to pay tribute to China Inc.
Okay, so set the scene. What's this going to be like? Is it a big expo hall or what?
Well, it's a giant outdoor thing. It's kind of the county fair in an oversized way and an amusement park, and everything looks huge and futuristic. Every country has this pavilion. The British Pavilion is the talk of the town. It's this earthy, funky structure with these protruding needles coming out. And part of the wow factor, they say, is to lure Chinese executives to come and gawk and then talk business in the VIP area.
So it sounds like this is an investment for these countries. What about corporations, corporate presence?
Well, multinational companies. General Motors has its own corporate pavilion. So does Coca-Cola and Cisco. Other countries sponsor their country pavilions. The U.S. pavilion actually is funded mostly by companies. And I spoke to Evelyn Kalik over at the Australian pavilion about the companies helping to foot the bill for them.
And for them, we're adding a little bit of icing to the cake.
Corporate sponsors
can invite their own VIPs and they get VIP treatment with fine Australian foods and wine, fine Australian chefs, world famous.
And so, Bob, this is kind of corporate suite writ large, catering to the captains of industry in China and to the foreigners who want to do business with them.
Marketplace's Scott Tong in Shanghai. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bob.
Things just went from bad to worse for Goldman Sachs. There are reports this morning that federal prosecutors are aiming a criminal investigation at the big investment bank. A probe by the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan is described as preliminary at this point. From Washington, Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer has the latest.
News of the investigation comes just days after Goldman executives testified at a congressional hearing. The Wall Street Journal first reported news of the criminal investigation. The journal says New York prosecutors began their probe after a referral from the Securities and Exchange Commission. The SEC has filed a civil case against Goldman. It accuses the investment bank of defrauding investors. Civil cases are easier to prove than criminal ones. Alistair Milne is an economist at City University London. He says the criminal case will be even more difficult because the financial products Goldman sells are very complex.
I think it'd be very hard to establish that they were actually exploiting customers. They'll always say, well, this is very complicated and we were just managing our risks.
Goldman says it'll cooperate fully with the investigation. A Goldman spokesman told the AP that, quote, given the recent focus on the firm, we're not surprised by the report of an inquiry. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
And finally this morning, every day a parade of double-decker tour buses rolls through the streets of the Big Apple, blaring out trivia on everything from the number of floors in the Empire State Building to the spot where John Lennon was shot, and who is or isn't buried in Grant's tomb. Well, oh, shut up already. The city council has responded to complaints about noise from residents with a vote to ban bus loudspeakers and require headphones within the next 5 years. Tour bus operators say it'll be costly. But New York's message is, keep it down, will you? The city that never sleeps wants a little peace and quiet. We always invite your noise or comments at marketplace.org. Just click on the link that says contact. I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.